Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and we want to welcome you again to another podcast. This is our part two of our Doctor Who series, and we're going to be talking about favorite companions. And as always, with me is my co-host, Miss Rachel. Say hello, Miss Rachel.
Hello, nerd. Because that is what I mean.
Oh,
today.
Animaniacs. I love Animaniacs. And we have with us the one, the only, the mistress of sci-fi. Yes, here she is. It's Miss Vicki Love. Say hello, Vicki.
Hello, Vicki. No, hello, everyone. I am so happy to be here and happy to do these shows. Doctor Who's such a favorite of mine. I can't even call it a favorite. I'm obsessed. So I'm happy to be here. And good morning, everyone here out on the West Coast. We're still in morning. Morning time.
Well, when you live in California, you're always in morning, right?
Yes.
You live in California, you're always in morning, right?
Right, right. You know,
yeah.
The weather might be nice, but we have no water, and taxes are incredible. Oh, yeah, and our gas prices beat everyone. They kill us with the gas prices.
There you go. So
yep.
So I just need to let everyone know that Miss Rachel and I are a little under the weather before we start this. We had a front coming through the New York City area, and whenever that happens, my sinuses go crazy. So you might hear me coughing a little bit, but otherwise I'm fine. And Miss Rachel, you're recovering too, right?
Yes, hopefully I am on the road to recovery. Last show we had, I was nursing myself with hot toddies, which seemed to help. This time I'm just going cold turkey here. So, yeah, same thing. We just had some major fronts come through, and I'm really susceptible to weather changes making me sick. So there you go. Welcome to living in the South.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you guys. I'm feeling really good. My affliction today is I got up too early and I've had like too much coffee.
There is no such thing as too much coffee. I'm just saying.
There might be. There might be when I just run my mouth off and just talk.
And that's different than when.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about the Doctor Who companions. And I thought I would start with all of us saying what our criteria is for a good companion. So, Vicki, I'm going to start with you. What's your criteria for a good companion?
I think my number one thing that I think a good companion does is make the doctor question, you know, whatever's happening. The curious companion is fine, but the companion that says, wait a minute, doctor, why are we doing this? What's your deal? Don't you think? That's my number one criteria for a good companion.
All right, and how about you, Rachel?
I think, honestly, the number one criteria for a good companion has got to be along the lines of their confidence and their self-assuredness, because... Well, like, you know, like Vicki said, yeah, the curious companion's all right, but the ones that make the doctor question things, it's when they have that confidence, when they don't rely on him to tell them what to do every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes the best companion.
And for me, I think the best companions change the doctor in terms of their relationship with the doctor makes him adapt more to being with humans and also more empathy and things like that. I think that has a lot to do with it too. Also, as anyone knows, you know, if it's a female and she's kick-ass, I'm going to love her anyway. So there you go. That's what I think. So at this point, I think I'll start with you, Rachel, and we'll talk a little bit about the companions in the Russell Davies reboot, the 2005 onwards. Name me one or two of your favorite companions and why.
Well, you've already heard my argument for what I think is probably my favorite companion and why they are a companion. And, of course, you know, very unpopular opinion here, but I can't explain myself. My favorite companion is actually Captain Jack Harkness. And it's not that you ever really see him acting in the capacity of a companion in the show, but if you watch the show and all of its spinoffs, you hear all of the stories of Harkness being in a companion capacity to the Doctor. And it's, I mean, he's more legend than real man or real companion, but I think that's part of what makes him so awesome is because, you know, there's so much more of this universe they could open up just by exploring more into his relationship with the Doctor, you know?
Yeah, you know,
Yeah. No, you're go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add that when you said that, the Doctor, you made me think about this. The Doctor and Captain Jack have like this familiarity with each other that we've never explicitly seen, but they wink at each other. The Doctor gives Jack these little treats here and there. It's like offstage.
It's a flirtation, very much
yes.
like a lot of his relationships with a lot of the companions. And,
right.
you know, the unbreakable rule, as most are concerned, let's not talk about Rose here because I am not going to get on that soapbox yet. As far as most are concerned, if the Doctor doesn't get romantic with the companions. And so it's kind of interesting. Like it's always, they're always, you know, towing that line of flirtation. And that's just Harkness's character in a nutshell anyway. I mean, he's really
right.
about, you know, towing the lines, but breaking boundaries. And, you know, it's very widely known. It is canon that Captain Jack Harkness is bisexual. So there is like,
right.
no doubt in my mind that there was a very interesting relationship between the Doctor and Harkness. And I'm not going to say if it was like, you know, a homosexual thing or if, you know, the Doctor was a female at this point, but I, without a shadow of a doubt, I know something went down there. And I am just like, the stories I can imagine between these two is just, oh my goodness. Be glad I don't write fan fiction. Jesus.
Yeah, and then also there's that whole face of Bo thing too with
oh,
Harkness
God.
And
oh,
so
that absolutely
they,
killed me.
There's also the episode, it's two-parter of course because there's some great actors in it and one of the great villains is resurrected, but they go to the end of time. And,
yeah.
and you know, the conversations between Harkness and the Doctor really start telling you that there's this history between them that we're never going to see. He's not the kind
oh,
of
yeah.
companion that we follow. He's a companion of the Doctor, but he has his own life that he time trips with. You know, he's got that wrist thing, and then he is part of Torchwood, thank goodness. And so that whole thing, it just, there's a continuity of story there that we as the audience are left to our imaginations, which is so freaking awesome in this day and age where showrunners have to, they tell us and tell us and tell us until we're barfing it. It's just a
right.
wonderful thing.
And That's what I love about Harkness and why I consider him the best companion, is because he's the one that's got the most story, because they've told so little of his story that,
yeah.
I mean, you really have no idea. And of course, you know, you go into Torchwood and you see like moments where Harkness is missing from Torchwood and they go off and do their own thing. And he comes back later and you find out that, you know, just by picking up on context clues about what he said, if you've watched that episode of Doctor Who,
yeah.
you know, it all comes together. It's continuity, like you said. And I absolutely love that they do that with his character because, I mean, it's really the embodiment of what Doctor Who is about, like the mystery and the magic and not ever fully knowing the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
I agree.
Good choice. So we'll move on to Vicky. You know, give us one of your favorite companions from the modern series reboot.
Okay. Well, I have to go here, Rachel. Apologies. But Rose Tyler is my favorite companion of the new Doctor, the reboot Doctor, because I'm totally in love with season one. Between her and Eccleston, that relationship, the way it grew, the way his quippiness and glibness was softened by her naivete was enlightened by him, and a type of empathy between the two of them, not just for each other, but for everything that they were doing, kind of blossomed. Those two are my favorite pairing in the new in the reboot. Ninth Doctor and Rose. All the other stuff that happened with Rose afterwards is the reason why so many people hate her character. And I get very angry about that, because if it wasn't for Rose, I don't think Doctor Who would have made it past that first season. So, and also maybe I have a little emotional attachment to it being completely on my own that first season, and my really great friend Russell, like, you got to watch it. And then we talk about it for hours. I'm really attached to that first season and the Ninth Doctor. But beyond that, if you really start analyzing what happens between the two of them, I really think that my criteria for a good companion is exemplified by the way in which Rose, especially when they go to watching the Earth blow up, the last days of Earth. I can't remember the name of the episode, but
yeah.
That's where she's like, I want to call my mom, and he's like, oh, she can't come with us, and all this. But then she starts. She's like, these are the trees, and her innocence, as well as the depth of understanding of losing the Earth itself, this beautiful planet, starts seeping into the Doctor. So that's Rose is my favorite because of those things.
Well, I think with Rose, it's very, very apparent that in that ninth season, which was the first season of the reboot, that she had a real effect on the Doctor. And that's one of the things that I look for in a companion. You know, how does the relationship change the Doctor? And mm-hmm. and there's no question in my mind that Rose had a major effect, not only on Christopher Eccleston, but even in that second season. I loved how that ended, even though it was very bittersweet. And I think it shows a real connection. And that's what we want to have to see between the companion and the Doctor. Would you guys agree with that?
Absolutely. But, you know, I explained that to you recently as well, why I do not consider Rose to be in the companion game, because by making the decision that she did to stay with the doctor in the alternate timeline, she completely negated all ability to ever do companionship again. And part of being a companion that I've always seen is that, like, you know, he comes back over time and continues to use them. Like, they don't stay a companion for one, you know, like, set 6 month period here or there. Like, it's, you know, they'll go off for a few months here, they'll come back home, they'll go off for a few months there, and he's got, you know, different companions during different times. And so I think that when Rose, you know, stays in the alternate dimension with the doctor, like, I just kind of consider that, because I love the Rose storyline. And it is Rose and, you know, the Eccleston doctor that got me watching Doctor Who. But I kind of consider her to be, like, her own little storyline there. And that's why I go for, you know, I know Carl's, you know, hate me for this one, but I wasn't the biggest fan of Donna Nobles. She just kind of grated on me.
Save that.
Okay, but wait. Now, I must be missing something, because as far as I know, Rose was not given a chance to go back into her original timeline. From what I understand, Rose was stuck in that alternate timeline, and the doctor brought his doppelganger to her. He didn't want to kill the doppelganger. He brought doppelganger 10th doctor to Rose so that she wouldn't be so sad for the rest of her life, but she wasn't given the choice to go back, because I think she would have gone back.
Agreed.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question.
You know what? Before we move on, just 1 second. There are companions, and then there are people like, you know, or characters, sorry. They're like people to me. Jack Harkness, and I'm just going to mention her. We don't want to talk about her yet, but River Song. There are people like that. And so I don't know if we can, like, Amy Pond is a companion, but Rory is Amy's companion. But I love Rory. And so we need to, as we're talking, I guess, start distinguishing between primary companion and other type of doctor friend.
Right.
What do you think?
What we can talk about is companions, you know, the major companions, and then those that were either characters, I mean, Missy.
On their own,
You know, And there'll be another character that I will mention that I love, okay? But we're going to move on to what I consider my favorite companion of the reboot. And there's just no question.
Oh, you think you get to talk, Carl? You're so funny.
Yes, I get to talk. I'm surrounded by two of my favorite strong women in my life. Seriously. I'm not kidding. I love both of you dearly. But, you know, I like strong women. I like women that are going to stand up to the doctor and go, "Oi!" And, of course, that has to be Donna Noble. I absolutely freaking love this woman. And the thing about Donna is, okay, so it was Catherine Tate, and she is a comedian. But there was more of a lightness to those episodes. But the one thing I really liked about her is she took no shit from them. You know, and I remember the saying, "Well, you're not important. You know, there's nothing." And she's like, "Wait a second." Well, she becomes one of the most important people in that whole reboot. And what happens to her actually made me cry. Seriously, made me cry. I also love the fact that when we get to like Martha, okay, and her family and how they reacted to the doctor, it was a whole different thing with Donna's family. And we'll get into that a little later because there's a character there I want to mention later. But I just loved Donna. And I thought that what she brought to the doctor and the change she brought to the doctor was an appreciation of the non-important humans, the ones that have no say, that the doctor then learns that it's important to save everybody. And I think that's why I love Donna and I love that relationship. So I'm going to leave it to you two, whichever one of you wants to go first, and you can basically just knock me down if you want to or agree with me. So go ahead, ladies. Rachel, we know you're not a big fan of Donna, so let's start with you.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think that she's, you know, as far as character-wise, she was really important. She was very, very necessary. And I really liked the changes that I saw her bring about in the doctor. But her as just a character, she's too brash for me in the beginning. And it really put me off initially. And I'm sure, you know, they did that intentionally, but it worked. And she's just never been one that particularly appealed to me because of that.
Okay. How about you, Vicki? What's your thoughts on Donna?
Well, Donna's a complicated character, actually. She wants a lot of things out of life, and she can't settle down for one thing. She's too smart for her life. She's way too smart for her life. She's supposed to be on Earth an ordinary person, and yet when she starts traveling with the doctor, she finds out that she's not ordinary, that she has this depth of compassion and empathy. I love the Ood episode because her empathy comes out for the Ood. She just cries, and it's like, oh, see, you think that Donna is just this born in the suburb slums of London, but look at her now. So she's a complicated character. And I suppose they were looking for someone exactly opposite of Rose, which they found, of course. But she's not my favorite because, like what Rachel said, the beginning was rough with her. The runaway bride is, she's too much. She's over the top. And
that was exactly it. It was that episode. I couldn't connect with it. And admittedly, I might have still been a little salty about what just happened to Rose. So I'm just saying.
Right.
There were some feelings involved. I'm allowed to feel my feelings.
Exactly.
Yes, absolutely.
I agree, man. Exactly. And so, but what you said, Carl, what happens to Donna is a lot like what happens to Rose and what happens to the first doctor also. I mean, not the first, the ninth doctor. Rose and Donna had the same exact things happen to them, that they took the TARDIS into them. They became Time Lords as humans, and that's too much for humans. And so the ninth doctor took that back from Rose to save her life, but then that killed him into regeneration. And then what happened to Donna, the doctor had to do that finagling so that Donna could live, but all her memories were gone. And that was sad, really just catastrophically sad. I would hate for that to happen to me. So Donna had for one season, Donna had one hell of a arc. But she's still not my favorite.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I'm going to argue the fact that I really like the brashness of the first episode with Donna because it caught me off guard. I didn't expect that from any companion, and here she is, just going after him, and it was like, holy shit, who is this woman? I want to know more about her. And then, of course, they didn't have her for a couple episodes, and they brought her back.
Right.
So, I really liked, it was like they were almost auditioning. Who's going to be the next companion? Right? In those two or three episodes.
No, I think in reality, she had some commitments that the actress, okay?
Okay, and that might be true, but the way that they played
it. No, it is true.
And it is true. But still, the way that they presented it on screen to us that didn't know, we weren't sure until she came back and then, she is the companion.
But, goes to the Jack Harkness thing. It was really smart writing to not jump right into a companion again. Because the doctor does have all these other friendships and he does all these other things before he settles on a companion, right? So giving him, a couple of episodes without a steady companion was actually a good choice.
Writing-wise, storytelling-wise. But the sense of brashness that she has in that first episode took you guys by surprise too, right?
No,
and you
not
reacted.
No, I didn't say that.
No.
Look, I like classic Doctor Who, and her brashness harkens back to the companions of the first three Doctors.
We're going to get there momentarily.
I know that. But what I'm saying is that brashness of Donna Noble is not unknown in the Doctor Who canon because Barbara was always more than brash. She was always arguing with the Doctor, like, take us back home. Why are we doing this? Fix your damn time machine. She never said damn. She's too proper. But if Donna is anyone, she's a mixture of Barbara and Romana One. And so there's a history and a canon that leads to Donna.
Yeah. And I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying that first impression. And to me, I fell in love with her with that first impression. So that's one of the main reasons. Hey, as I said it before, I'm surrounded by two of the strongest women who I care about, and there's another one that I've never met in real life and never will, but damn it, I love her too. So there you go.
Hey, folks, I'm not that strong. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So now we go back to our favorite companions of the classic series. And since you talked Ian and Barbara, I'm going to give it to you, Miss Vicky. Tell us about Ian and Barbara or someone else you want to talk about in the classic.
Well, the very beginning was the Doctor and Susan. And Susan is the Doctor's granddaughter. And she is a Time Lord also. People don't talk about her like she's a Time Lord, but she is. And she demonstrates it by her knowledge of her more profound knowledge than, say, like a regular high school kid her age, or what her age is perceived by Ian and Barbara, who were her high school teachers on Earth while the Doctor hung out on Earth for a while. So Susan, I do not think Susan goes into the category of companion, but when you think of the very first Doctor and why this show actually became got renewed. Back then in the early 1960s, why people were watching it, why people liked it, I think it's because of Ian and Barbara and how they were always questioning the doctor, how they started this whole journey with the doctor as unwilling, super unwilling, especially Barbara. She was always against everything that the doctor wanted to do. She just wanted to go home, and who could blame her? But as time went on, the doctor and Barbara, they admired each other's minds because Barbara, even back then, was given a type of intelligence that wasn't really on American television yet. If you watch, like, say, Star Trek, there weren't very many women given intelligence. You know, there were three given intelligence. But in Doctor Who, Barbara is a main character running for this whole length of the series and or their time together, and she's extremely smart, along with Ian, of course. And so I think because they solidified what Doctor Who was all about, I think that even though I love Romana's both one and two, I think that Ian and Barbara are my favorite classic Doctor Who companions.
Okay. Okay. You know, I just rewatched the first 6 episodes of season 1 to reintroduce myself because it's been a while since I've seen it. And that's one of the things about Barbara is her unwillingness, you know, they're basically kidnapped, as you said. And so it's like,
yeah.
I want to get back. And, you know, and there's this real tension that you don't get, not even with Donna. You don't get that tension with Donna, but you get it with Barbara. And it's really interesting how, if you take a look at that beginning set of episodes and then where it goes from there and the different companions and so on and so forth, how things change, that most of the companions
right.
want to go with them, right? But that's one of the few where they didn't want to go. And I think that brings a real... Yeah, go ahead.
Here's the difference between today's storytelling and back then storytelling. They had an arc, and their arc ended up when the doctor finally brought them back to Earth, Barbara was worried about the doctor. Is he going to be okay? Ian, is the doctor going to be okay? She says words like that. I'm paraphrasing. But through this arc, through these three people, Ian, the doctor used to call him, his name was Chesterton, how do you say it?
Chesterton.
That's it. No,
yeah.
No.
Chesterton.
And he used to
right.
say Chesterton. And Ian would always correct him. And, I mean, that's just a tiny little story thing that makes it so real. And then the doctor would do it on purpose sometimes just to get him, just to dig at him. But by the end, they didn't just admire each other. They were friends, deeply connected friends, and that's why the doctor took them back home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Rachel, I know you saw a couple of the episodes. What do you think of Ian and Barbara?
I think they're all right, but honestly, I have a different vote. Even though I'm not as familiar with the old school Doctor Who, I do have a vote on the best companion from the old school Doctor Who. And that is
okay.
Just two words for you guys. Sarah Jane. Obviously the best companion because she's the only one that got a spinoff later. So, duh, I've seen all of the Sarah Jane adventures. Like, that was awesome. Plus, she got to keep K-9. Obviously, she's a very trusted companion if she got to keep K-9.
That's right. That's right.
That's right,
yeah.
Damn it. I don't have to see all of the old Doctor Who to know who the best companion is, because Sarah Jane was fucking awesome. And she took on with all those kids and tried to teach them how to battle aliens and shit, and she deserves awards for that, because it was crazy.
Well, I don't think you could do any better than Sarah Jane. Seriously. Sarah Jane, and I have seen all of the Sarah Jane Chronicles also. And I also took a look at some of the original series in preparation to this. And she's just Sarah Jane. I mean, I can't really say that she has, you know, something truly special other than she's Sarah Jane. I mean, that's special enough. And the relationship between her and Baker, and also with the kids in the reboot, I mean, not the reboot, but the sequel, I think is just tremendous. And, of course, when she passed away.
That was the whole thing. It's like I didn't even realize it was a reboot at first. And I had my friend telling me about it. And he was like, oh, you need to watch this with your kid. And I was like, okay, cool. And then I figured out it was a Doctor Who spinoff. And I was like, what the fuck? Yes! And, you know, I can say that I've seen at least pieces of episodes from the original Doctor Who, because in the Sarah Jane Chronicles, they frequently use clips from the old show. So there, I've seen flashbacks.
So what's your thoughts on Sarah Jane, Vic?
She's kind of like a Donna Noble to me. I like Romana better, and both of them, and they preceded her, of course. And so
right.
With the Fourth Doctor. And so, but they were Time Lords, and Sarah Jane is not. She's a human. And so they are different in every aspect. But here's the thing. Thanks to Sarah Jane and Tom Baker, American audiences got Doctor Who. And so that I will forever be indebted to Sarah Jane and how she changed Doctor Who, so that we over here across the pond in our lowbrow thinking of American ways, that we were blessed with Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, she just a wonderful companion, no question at all. Now, I'm going to take it, and of course, you two already know where I'm going with this.
I made a mistake.
Okay.
I had to look because I was over here, as if you can see me. And I was wrong. Romana's came after Sarah Jane. Sorry. I'm sorry out there.
Hey, none of us are perfect. Trust me on that.
Yeah.
Anyway, where I'm going, I grew up in the 70s, and I fell in love with Pam Grier, because Pam Grier kicked ass, okay? And she just
I love you
just
guys, but I think I'm having an asthma attack, so
oh,
I'm going to let you go.
Okay, I'm going to put you on okay, don't hang up, but I'm going to put you on mute, so don't worry about it. Anyway... You know, I grew up and I love Pam Grier and I love women who kick ass. And there's one companion that goes way beyond the pale in that terms with the Doctor. And that's Ace. And I love Ace. I absolutely just adore that woman beyond belief. The only woman I know of up until that time that basically kicked a Dalek's ass with a baseball bat. You know, and just, you know, the explosions, everything about her. And of course, the punk aesthetic, too, which I really liked.
Right, yeah.
You know? you know, because, you know, I love punk music and I love the punk goddess Nina Hagen, and there was a lot there that I was connecting with her at the time. And so, yeah, Ace to me is just kick-ass, and she's coming back. She's coming back. They're bringing back the actress and the character for, Jodie Whittaker's last episode. So that's pretty awesome. So,
right.
So what's your thoughts on Ace? Because I'm very interested in seeing what you think of Ace.
Well, there was a companion that was a warrior woman who would rather kill than anything else.
That was Leela, right?
Somebody, yes, Leela. So Ace was not quite the first one to kick ass or kick butt or whatever. It was Leela. Leela was the one. And so, and Leela also faced off against robots and really horrible Centaurians. And so she set the stage so that when Ace came, who was pretty brash herself, lot like a younger Donna Noble in ways, there was a history already of Leela carrying her knife around, stabbing bad guys, that the doctor doesn't like violence, but he doesn't mind if his companions sometimes use violence. So,
right.
And I like Ace. I like her a lot. She was something that the modern showrunners, like those who reboot Star Trek and reboot Star Wars and this horrible thing called Rings of Power, all these new people who don't know how to tell stories, if they would just go back and educate themselves in how these older shows ran for decades, they would see that bringing in Ace was a ploy to bring in a younger audience, and it worked so well because she was organic. She was a creature of her time. You said all the punk stuff and her music and the way she dressed, her hair, all that stuff. And she sort of grew up with the doctor, and she fell in love for the first time and all of that. So Ace was a great character, great companion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I know at the end of the series where it was canceled. Now, they had plans for the next season, but it didn't come to fruition. Just the two of them walking off and saying, we're going to have more adventures. Just, you know, it made me kind of sad that we never saw that, you know, as viewers of the TV show, because I would have loved to have more of Ace. That's one of the reasons I'm just so pumped that she's coming back. Seriously. I think it's one of the great, you know, neither one of us are big fans of the Whittaker era, and that's not anything really to say about Jodie Whittaker. To me, it's more the writing than that. We'll get into that in another episode. But
right.
To have her come back, I think, is a real, real smart move. Seriously.
I do, too.
So there you go.
I do, too. And another companion, Perry Brown, she's coming back also.
Right.
She's coming back along with Ace. And Melanie Bush might also be coming back. Perry and Melanie might. Melanie might also be coming back, the three of them.
Yeah, and I think another companion we need to talk about very briefly from the classic is Jamie.
Jamie's my favorite male other than Ian. I love Jamie. For one thing, Jamie's Scottish. I have a little Scottish blood in me. And he always wore a kilt.
Right.
And And he took ribbing from different places they went. They would say, this guy in a skirt, you expect him to fight or whatever. I just saw that in a Troutnik episode. And so he was, I love Jamie because he's always questioning. He's always ready to help the doctor no matter what. He's the fierce, loyal companion of the doctor.
Yes. Yeah, I just rewatched the Cybermen series, the first Cybermen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's such a great, that's so good. And he's so good in it, too.
He is.
Oh, my God.
The doctor keeps saying, Jamie, don't stare into the screen. And he's like, I'm not, doctor. And he's staring into the screen. Oh, yeah, it's good. It's great. Great stuff.
No, but I, you know, the thing is, in preparing for this, I mean, both Rachel and I got a chance to look at some of the earlier episodes. Now, I'd seen them about 3 years ago in total, but you always have to refresh for these podcasts. And Jamie was one that really, really came back to me as a really fine companion. And so I definitely wanted to mention Jamie. Now, unfortunately, Rachel's not with us, but we were also talking about ancillary characters, those that, you know, you might consider them companions, but they're not really. They're more connected to the companions in one way or the other, or to the episode or episodes they're in. And so I'm going to leave it to you as far as what we're going to call ancillary characters or companions. And mention one or two that you really like, Vicki.
Okay, are we doing classic or reboot?
Let's do classic first.
Okay. Well, my favorite. Hands down, my favorite is the Brigadier. Can't not love this man. Nicholas Courtney is the actor. He started out with the Second Doctor. And in the Second Doctor, he was not the Brigadier. He was called the Colonel. And he was a colonel. And his part just kept growing and growing as this story, the Web of Fear, continues to, you know, be told. And it's obvious that he is, for one thing, I love his voice. His voice is just unbelievably beautiful. And so when you're watching, say you have BritBox like I do, and you're watching the Second Doctor, Troughton's episodes, like I mentioned last podcast, if you're watching the Troughton episodes, you're going to see that a lot of the film was lost, but a lot of the auditory the is still there. So what they did was the archivist took stills, and so in some of the episodes there are stills and a little bit of film, and always the script is always read by the people who are doing the episode. So the Brigadier is in a couple of, I mean, he's the colonel. Okay, then he shows up for the Third Doctor as the Brigadier, and from that point on, Nicholas Courtney is our Brigadier, and he's in the Third Doctor, Fourth Doctor, Fifth Doctor, and Seventh Doctor. This is how much he's not a companion, but he is so much part of the show. In fact, he's almost he's in almost every episode of the Pertwee.
Years. Well, of course, he was working for UNIT at the time, so he's in almost all the Pertwees. But don't forget that his daughter then becomes very important in the later series too, the Brigadier's daughter. So his, you know, his influence is much later, you know, and that's with the 12th Doctor, that's with Capaldi. So yeah,
right.
Yeah, I have to agree I have to agree with you 100%. It's the Brigadier.
Yeah.
No question.
Yeah, and yeah, there's no one quite like him in all of Doctor Who, actually. There's
yeah.
no one quite like that character in all of Doctor Who. They bring back UNIT in the reboot, and we have one woman who is actually in Torchwood 2. So she's kind of like, she, yeah, you're, that's who you're talking about. She's in the Matt Smith. She's in Capaldi.
Well,
I don't know if she shows up in Tenet, but I'm just doing this by memory right now. The whole thing with the UNIT is so important to the whole British thing. So they had to have some tie-in, and it was brilliant to bring in the granddaughter of the Brigadier.
Right.
But
right.
there's no
and,
other
and
character like him.
No, no, not at all. Not at all. And his appearances throughout the series, and we're talking years and years and years, right?
Yeah.
From the By second
says.
Doctor to the seventh, you know? I mean, seriously.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
you
know, no one
right.
has
There's...
that longevity. Nobody has that longevity.
No.
Nobody.
The only one who comes who is the only one who like him is like River Song. She's
yeah,
the only one who comes and Jack Harkness. That's why they're in a separate category. The Brigadier, Jack Harkness, and River Song are
mm-hmm.
Are in this category of people who the Doctor knows outside of us watching episodes, outside of us, and we use our imaginations to fill in all that other, you know, stuff, the time. And so it makes these right. characters more intriguing.
Agreed. Now we're going to go into the reboot series. And if there's one character in all of Doctor Who that I want to be, there is no question who it is. And it's Wilford.
That you want to be?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's Wilford.
Yeah.
Wilford is, I swear to God, from where he first comes in with Tennant in that one episode where he's selling the newspapers.
Yeah.
And that was supposed to be the one off for him. But then they had hired someone to be Wilford, but he got sick, and they decided to go with Bernard Cribbins. And then the whole thing that they recognize each other, and again, the sense, you're not important. Why, and then that whole realization, and of course that goes along with Donna too, and that he's the grandfather of Donna, and he supports her 100%. Go with the Doctor. You need to go there. And then of course that final bit, which is just knock on the, you hear four knocks, and it's like, oh my God, it's brilliant. That last scene between him and Tennant is just amazing. It's literally
yeah, it
fucking
is.
Amazing.
It is.
There are very, very, I won't say there are very few characters that make me cry, but he's the whole fate there between him and the Doctor, I was bawling my fucking eyes out. I literally was crying like crazy. And I was just so, you know, my heart was plucked out and it's in front of me like a telltale heart. It's like, put it back in, goddammit. seriously. Wilford is just an amazing character. And in many ways, you know, we talk about River Song and we've talked about the Brigadier and Jack
Harkness.
Well,
we haven't
Harkness
talked about River yet.
Yeah, but well, trust me, we will. There's no way we're not talking about River.
I feel she's
but,
next.
But, oh, she is next. She is next. But the one thing I want to say about Wilford is out of all those characters, Wilford is the one that touched my heart the most. And for that, I will always, always love that character and have a great love of Bernard Cribbins. And let's just make a point that though we don't consider it canon, Bernard Cribbins was actually in one of the Invasion of the Daleks movies from 1966 with Peter Cushing. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, he has a long history with Doctor Who. And I just think it's amazing. And I look for the upcoming, I guess it's going to be for the 60th anniversary, that they do, that he filmed some bits before he passed away.
Right, he did. Yeah, he did.
And so I'm looking forward to that.
In fact, he was filming the week he passed away. He was filming. And so, but that's, you know, a tribute also to Russell Davies and his continuity. Because Russell T. Davies, and we'll talk about him next show, I think, or two shows from now. The thing is that what Wilfred also did was harken back to the very beginning of Doctor Who. And what do I mean? Well, a grandfather and a granddaughter. Doctor Who has always emphasized generations, even though Time Lords live for 1,000 years or more. They're very family oriented. And many times people will ask doctors, especially number 10, David Tennant, about do you have a family or do you know what it's like to have children, these kinds of things. The doctor gets really closed mouthed and very introverted when it comes to talking about his family. But throughout the decades of Doctor Who, there's always been this generational thing. Grandparents and grandchildren, the connection between them, and how there's always that thing in between the parents, which represents the real world, present time, and all the crap you have to deal with. But grandparents and grandchildren represent the love. Because if you go back to William Hartnell, he seems very harsh and very disconnected. But when he's with Susan and she's afraid or she's missing, he is a grandfather. And so that's what Wilfred brought. Who did he love more than anyone else in the entire world? Donna. He loves his daughter. Obviously, it's written into the story. You see it. But who does he spend his time with? Who spends her time with someone other than the doctor? Donna spends her time with her grandfather. So
yes.
It's a great storyline. Just absolutely
good. You know, the other thing, too, is I love the scene where David Tennant looks at Bernard Cribbins and he says, I would be proud to have you as my dad.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Because that's the connection that you get found family too. And that I think is always important. And that's one of the things about companions. They become family to the doctor.
Right.
The
surrogate family.
And so,
surrogate.
Yeah, surrogate family. Or as I like to say, found family. But either or.
Yeah, but not like you and me, not like what you're saying, found family. The doctor always knows he's going to have to tell them goodbye. We don't always know that with the people in our lives, but the doctor knows that he's always going to have to tell those people goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of heartbreaking, when Sarah Jane comes back in the David Tennant episode, because she's like, oh God, he finally came back. Maybe I can go back into the TARDIS. And the doctor's just like, you can't. I'm sorry, that time is over. You know, I didn't expect to see you here. And even though it's going to break your heart, I'm leaving with these other people. And so, so there's that. They're surrogates. They're always surrogates.
Good point.
Except
okay,
Rose,
so So we've got to go to River Song. And I'm just going to give this to you, and you run with it, because we both love this woman. So go for it.
Okay. River Song. She is, what can I say? I don't know. She is, she's this character that they never really wrote before she became the character River Song, okay? They didn't have this arc for her at the very beginning. The silence in the library.
Right.
They had not figured out if they were ever going to bring her back during Matt Smith or the next one or what was going to happen. But her presence and the fan reaction to this woman was so overwhelming that they immediately started brainstorming, where does she fit into all of this? And what can you say? Alex Kingston is what, you know, she was born to play this Doctor Who character. She was born to be in Doctor Who. She was born to play River Song. Because I can't think of anyone else who could have ever done this. And River Song's not a companion. She's the Doctor's other wife. And when I say other, you got to watch the episode with the TARDIS and the personification of the TARDIS. So I'm not going to wreck that for anyone. But River Song has this whole Matt Smith, Amy Pond, Rory Williams, Mr. Pond, arc.
Connection.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a connection. It's an arc. It's an absolute arc. Because when the season ends and the Ponds are gone and Matt Smith is going to regenerate, River Song still comes back, because within this story and this arc, there's that little book that started in the Tenet episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I have it all right here in my diary that you can't see.
Spoiler.
And this is
spoiler.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where that whole that the word came from and all of that. And so it's brilliant storytelling without even knowing you're being brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even if they retcon that idea, and I'm not going to go into specifics, even if they retcon it, it's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant idea. It truly is.
Right.
And I will, she's moving backwards and he's moving forwards. Let's put it that way. So they cross at certain times.
Right, right. Have we done this yet? Have we done that yet? Oh, you don't recognize me because, I'm before that. I'm after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so there's all of that, too. And of course, she goes on to Capaldi, too. And and that last episode with her, and it's just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Again,
it's
really great writing. One thing I have to say about River Song, and I'll see if you remember this, but when I was visiting you, we rented a movie called Croupier. And there was a woman in there that I just, like, started drooling over. And you looked at me like, what? Well, that was Alex Kingston. So I knew who she was before she became River Song. And when I saw her River Song, I'm just like, oh, this is perfect. So like what I said last week, it was the actor that really brought me into Capaldi because I knew him previously. It's kind of true here also. They're not as well as Capaldi. But she is just, again, she's a very strong character. She doesn't take shit from the Doctor. They're on the same level. And it's wonderful, the interaction. And that's the one thing that I like, that the interaction when you get a strong companion, a strong character, that the interaction becomes different. And it fleshes out the doctor and the character of the doctor even more as you see how he reacts to all these different people and how they affect him. And so go ahead.
Okay, and keeping with the things that happen, keeping with canon, which is really hard for these reboot shows these days. They just don't know how to do it, or they just hate doing it. The Doctor always has problems with the TARDIS, always, from the very beginning. Ian and Barbara are like, take us back, and he can't do it. The TARDIS is broken, or the TARDIS is acting up, and he can't seem to get back to Earth. There are times when he purposely doesn't go back to Earth, but there are times when he can't do it. And he's always having problems throughout all the Doctors. I mean, during the Pertwee era, he never traveled anywhere in the TARDIS. Well, almost never.
Very little.
And so that's their budget. And so this whole thing about the Doctor not really knowing how to control the TARDIS is kind of a running joke through all the different regenerations of the Doctor. So during Matt Smith, when River's in the TARDIS, River, who is part of the TARDIS, that's her essence, and that's why she's part Time Lord, she knows how to run the TARDIS. And Matt Smith, who's such a fine actor, he's like, how do you know that? How do you know that? He's running around behind her, watching her work the TARDIS. What he can't ever do, and it's hilarious, and that's just a subplot. It's just a running joke that she did so well, just kind of matter-of-factly, you know, just doing it, which made the character so real.
And one of the things I love about that is there's a scene, I forget which one it's in, but she's doing that, right? And he pops in and he says, well, I taught you all this, right? And she said, no, you weren't there, or something like that.
Yeah. Because he's always trying to save face around River.
Yeah.
He just doesn't know, especially Matt Smith. Now, when they meet, when Peter Capaldi. Yeah. When they're together, it's a different dynamic. It's a totally different dynamic. But
well, I love the episode where he doesn't realize she's River Song. She knows who he is, right? And that one it's on the ship has all those. Okay, am I wrong?
No, he knows. He knows River. He knows who she is.
And she doesn't. That's right.
And she doesn't know it's him because she has never seen that face before. So she's doing all – she's the River Song bargaining for a jewel. Can't remember what the jewel was. But this jewel, and there's this – this is our Nardole introduction. And he's
and
a great
Nardole
companion, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a great companion. But she doesn't know until she starts making this great, great speech about the Doctor. And as she's giving this speech, it's just a wonderful speech about the Doctor doesn't care about anything because he's the Doctor and he doesn't have to care about anything or anyone. It's just a great speech. And in the middle of that speech, she realizes that she's standing right next to the Doctor. It's one of my favorite scenes of all time.
All right. Yeah. Now, I think with Missy, we're going to table her until the next one.
Well,
but
yeah,
I
villains.
Do wanna...
We can't talk about the Master. We're going to do villains, right?
Right, exactly. But Missy's a little different. And we'll get into that with the episode about the Master
she's
and villains.
Still the
and
Master.
Such.
And she's
oh,
still
she's
trying
still
to
the Master.
Kill him.
I agree.
And she's
I
still
agree.
Evil.
Yeah.
You might be in love with her, but she's still evil. Okay?
Well, I am in love
with
her. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But I do want to just mention, are there any other companions, particularly in the reboot, you want to mention? Because there's one more I want to mention.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Martha Jones. Because
she gets the
S-H-I-T end of the deal. Out of everyone, the doctor uses her. And he uses her to get over Rose. He uses her to fill the void in his life that he never thought he was ever going to have again after, you know, the Time War and the Daleks and all that. And he uses her, and it hurts her, and it breaks her heart, but she becomes a stronger person. She becomes her own person from it. And that's, you know, we have to walk through fire before we know who we are type thing. But Martha, if you empathize with her, then you actually feel that feeling of, I'm holding on to something that I never had, and I'm holding on to something that this person doesn't care really about me. So Martha has this unique place in the Doctor Who storyline. He's never really that careless with anyone other than Martha. And then her final she finally gets together with Mickey, who Mickey is treated pretty badly also. And it's funny that they both get together and are fighting this war together and fall in love together. But Mickey is treated pretty badly. He's not a companion, though. He's treated pretty badly by the Ninth Doctor. And Martha is treated pretty badly by the Tenth Doctor. But we get a resolution there that is somewhat okay. But a lot of people don't like the way that the Tenth Doctor treats Martha. And she doesn't deserve it at all.
No, I agree. I agree. But the one thing I do have to say about Martha is boy, does she turn out to be one kick-ass woman. That whole thing where she travels the planet telling the story of the Doctor so that there's hope. It's just amazing.
Yes. See, she rises above the broken heart thing. She could have been a broken-hearted person. She rises above that and becomes better than the Doctor.
Absolutely.
She becomes better than the Doctor by doing that. Mm-hmm. And she literally saves the Earth.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a great, great arc for her. And Freema, who plays the character, the actress, really does well with that whole thing, because you see a lot of the disappointment in her face and how she acts, but then she becomes better than that. And that's an amazing thing.
Kidding?
And I think
there's that whole two-part episode where the Doctor falls in love. He gives her the pocket watch, and he forgets who he is, and he falls in love, and she has to be the servant. She has to go back in time and become a black servant, treated the way that she's treated during those two episodes. She has to take all of that. Talk about strong women. She's way stronger than most all the women in Doctor Who throughout. She has to deal with so much, and she retains her empathy and compassion in the end.
Well, you know, the one thing, you know, I talk about strong women in this episode, but with Martha, it's an emotional strongness. And that's what makes her better than most companions. She has this emotional arc and this emotional toughness that she can do something like that and not feel, you know, to rise above it. Let's put it that way, to rise above all the hurt that she had to deal with. And that is an amazing thing. You know, For me, I do want to
she's
do
truly
a quick
like
shout
a phoenix.
Out. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Good. That's good. I hadn't thought about that, but yes. You know, maybe she's from Arizona. I don't know. Never mind. Well, you know, maybe Arizona, England. I don't know. But I do want to at least do one other shout out to the companion that I think is forgotten. She was only on for one season, but God damn, what an arc. And that's Bill.
Yes. Oh, my God. Why couldn't we have more Bill, less Clara and more Bill?
Yeah, really. Really. I mean, Bill to me, you know, there's a number of reasons. One is of course, we're Captain Harkness, part of the LGBTQ community, but Bill, that was right at the beginning. We knew that. And I love the relationship in terms that Capaldi's doctor is at the university and she's a student. And that whole sort of like, you know, professor-student relationship that morphs into something much more than that. And she's amazing. And it's a shame that we didn't get more of her because I thought the actress was absolutely fantastic. I thought the art
was
really good.
Heartbroken. Absolutely. You know, you talk about the regeneration of the 10th Doctor with Wilfred and all of that, but what happened to Bill?
Oh my
goodness. It's not just what happened, but they went through it. It was excruciating. It just rips your heart extremely slowly, just in half. And I like, And no matter what you have to say about Missy, she's the one who sent Bill down there. She's the one who created all of that. And so, you know, the master is the master. So anyway, yeah, I could have really, before that happened, I could have really loved another whole season of Bill. Unless Jodie Whittaker, absolutely. It's too bad Capaldi wanted to leave.
Yeah.
And left Clara.
Mm-hmm. So we haven't really talked about this, and I think we need to touch on it. Our least favorite companions.
Okay. Well, first off, I just want to mention two men. They were in love with companions. And I think that without them, the companions, especially Clara, would have been less, okay? The impossible girl scenario and story arc with Matt Smith should have ended with Matt Smith. Clara should have never come over with Capaldi. That was a mistake. And so they left Clara on Earth, and Clara fell in love with a teacher, and his name was Danny Pink, who actually, if you continue to watch these and like binge watch them, you're going to see a parallel between what happened to Danny Pink and what happened to Bill. And it's sad. It's beyond sad. And Danny Pink comes back in the Christmas episode with Santa, and that was a great, great, great Christmas episode for Capaldi. Clara has to deal with her hurt, and then they go on to their last season together where Clara has to make her sacrifice. But Clara is my least favorite. But wait, before that, I want to mention my favorite companion of a companion, and that's Rory. I love Rory. Rory is, he's the funniest. He's the most compassionate. He takes so much crap from the doctor. He takes so much crap from Amy. Amelia Pond is so mean to her husband. It's unreal. And so Rory is this, and what happens to him? Oh my God.
The Centaurian.
No. The end of the pond.
Oh, Jesus, yes.
The weeping angels. Holy shit. Crap. Fuck. Ugh. That is
what?
My number one. Why did you do that? And then they turn around and do it to Danny Peek, and then they turn around and do it to Bill. It's like, oh my God, I wanted to be a companion, but I never want to be a companion now.
Well, you know, what I said about the Centaurian is something that made me love Rory, because he stood there for 2,000 years guarding that thing.
Pandorica.
And he stood there for 2,000 years. Commitment, my friend. That's awesome.
Yeah. There's none of that in the world now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Rory is just a great character. He is a great character. And the more you watch the 11th Doctor with all the Rory episodes, the more you just deeply understand the acting chops of Arthur Darvill. He's just great.
Oh,
and you
yeah.
can find him on all kinds of other things. He guest stars on it. He was on Legends for 2 or 3 seasons, I can't remember. But he's just fantastic. And so it's worth it to watch Rory. Okay,
oh,
I've talked a lot, but do you want to do your least favorite companion?
Yeah, I I'm rewatching a lot of the older stuff, and we mentioned Troughton and how they basically lost the video, but they saw the audio, and I always saw the one set of Troughton right at the beginning with Ben and Polly, and they're not good.
Yeah,
they're not good. They're not good at all.
Yes, they're pretty terrible. They are, especially Ben. I really just dislike Ben.
Oh, God. He made me like, what the fuck? Why is he here? Kick him off the fucking TARDIS, man.
Are you kidding? They were up on top of that cliff, and I'm just like, push him off the cliff. Push him off the cliff.
Yeah.
They were bad choices. And not that Polly was a poor choice, but the way in which Ben acted towards the doctor and towards everything, he couldn't believe anything, even when it smacked him in the face. Barbara couldn't believe things at first, but she was a realist. Ben, he just lives in a fantasy world. And in fact, the very first episode that Ben was in. Oh, no. Sorry. That's Steven. Oh, my gosh. I really don't like Steven. Steven is the one I really don't like. He's the one I wanted to be pushed off the precipice, okay? He's just
okay.
arrogant. He's the one who led to so many problems. And so, yeah, Steven.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to the Steven ones yet to rewatch them. That's on the docket, but it's not there yet. But Ben and Polly,
that's pretty funny. And then another tragic character in the first in the classic was Adric. I felt really, really sad for this boy. Total genius boy, put down by the doctor, and then sacrifices his life. It's just, oh my gosh, that's a heartbreaking story.
That is heartbreaking. Patrick is very heartbreaking. As far as the new series is concerned, it's kind of hard because I do like all of them to a certain degree. But I think the one that's most grating to me is Clara. I think I have to agree with you on.
And she has the most screen time of any companion.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and you mentioned the difference between her and Smith and Capaldi, and that she shouldn't have gone on Capaldi. I think that she was mismatched with Capaldi.
Oh yeah.
That Capaldi.
Absolutely.
I mean, as an actress, I think he just basically chewed her up and spit her out.
Yes, 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 yes. In fact, she learned a lot from him. Because she's different in the next season than the first season that she's with him.
There's a story.
Yeah.
And I guess there is video of it where in that first season, he had just come off from In the Loop where he plays this very, very foul-mouthed politician.
Right.
British politician.
Right, right.
And they were doing, they were taping a scene from the first season. And all of a sudden, he just basically goes into that character. Like every other word is the F word. And she's just like, what the fuck? And I would love to see footage of that. I don't think they've ever put the footage out.
I bet there's YouTube on it. I'm pretty sure there is.
I've looked now. I've heard some audio from it. They have audio, but they don't have the actual footage. The audio is fucking hysterical. It's hysterical. But I think he did that just to say, you know, you're up against somebody who knows what he's doing. Because it's apparent, particularly in that first season, where she just does not jibe with him at all.
The first two episodes, I think they told her to be a little, because Clara has traveled with the doctor a lot, and she's in love with Matt Smith's doctor. You can tell, absolutely, you know, and he very much, after the Ponds, he very much attached himself to her. And she did have that character arc, the impossible girl, which because she showed up in the Christmas special before Amy Pond. And so I think it was before, it might be after, I'm getting things mixed up now. Too much caffeine. And so the thing is that I don't know if it was lazy. I don't know what was happening in Doctor Who world at the time. Stephen Moffat, what was going on? I know that when Matt Smith left, they weren't really prepared for Matt Smith to leave, you know, when he first announced it. And just like when Capaldi left, they weren't prepared for it. And so the holding on to Clara was like they're okay, our show is falling apart, at least we have this continuity. I think that's how that happened. Okay.
And
because,
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So very briefly, we're gonna go into overtime here in about 30 seconds. So just stick with us. We're fine. Don't worry about it. Okay. So anything else as we wrap up here that you want to say before we get into housekeeping?
All I want to say is that if you're a Doctor Who fan and you're rewatching, give a little attention to the companions and to the way in which the stories are written and the back and forth between them, because I think this is what really makes the Doctor Who story strong. That's what Doctor Who is about. It's not just about time travel and Monster of the Week or anything like that. It's more about the Doctor and his companions and how they gel together and stand up against these obstacles. So I think that's where a lot of enjoyment comes.
Yep, I agree too. And watch all of Doctor Who, because we didn't mention all the companions, and many of them are well worth checking out, and all the ancillary characters. It's a great show. Definitely check it out. So at this point, we're just going to go very briefly into housekeeping. And basically, what we're going to say is we really don't have anything planned, because I'm going on vacation. I'm leaving tomorrow, and I'm going to be going down to Memphis to visit Rachel, and we're looking forward to that. Now, I will tell you this. We will have shows next week, but we don't exactly know what they are. So I know we'll do a couple of commentaries. I know that one of them is going to be an Oktoberfest celebration. We're going to have German food and watch Dark Skies, and that's going to happen. But I don't have any of that scheduled, so just keep up with Blog Talk and with our Facebook page, and we'll have that all let you know as soon as possible. But they're going to be basically pop-up episodes next week. I will be coming back on the 24th. What I can tell you, this is on the 25th. We are going to have start our series of Strange Shit From, Name the Country. And we're going to do Strange Horror Shit From Canada on the 25th. On the 30th, we're going to do Strange Horror Shit from the Philippines. We're going to do maybe during the week that I'm off, we'll do maybe Japan and also Mexico. So we're looking at four those episodes coming up soon. And as far as our part three of Doctor Who, I don't think it's going to happen next week, but it will happen 2 weeks from today. Okay?
Right.
Because I will be on vacation. So, Miss Vicki, just tell us a little bit about what's going on with you and the movie that you're filming and all that sort of good stuff.
Okay. Our film, Lake, has resumed filming after a two-month hiatus because of COVID. You think COVID happened back in 2020? Well, it's still happening now. Be careful out there. We are filming the last third of our movie. And everything went super well. In fact, better than expected. We had fun, laughs. We got a lot of work done last weekend. We are filming again this weekend. And I'm just really excited about it all coming together. And hopefully by 2023, the entire film will be finished, and we'll go from there.
And you'll go into post-production. And so just keep us informed about that. And when you're ready, maybe after you shoot, we can continue our series of the audio journal of the movie Lake,
right,
which we wanted
right.
to definitely do at one point.
Once you come back from your vacation, we'll set something up for November.
Okay, that's exactly what we'll do. All right. Fair enough, folks. Well, listen, thank you very, very much for joining us this afternoon. And our thoughts with Rachel as she's dealing with her sinuses and asthma. I know how that feels. So, you know, get better, Miss Rachel. And we will, as I said, keep looking at our Facebook page at Blog Talk, and we will have shows up next week. But we'll see. And also, I'm going to have a private tour of the Stax Museum, which is a music museum. And Kenan Walker will be doing that with us, and maybe even David Arquette, because they're filming a documentary right now with David Arquette. So I'm sure we'll also have that. We'll pull together something with Kenan also next week. So there you go. Again, thank you very, very much, Vicki. Always a pleasure to have
You're
you
welcome.
on and have the Mistress of Sci-Fi on. It's wonderful. And thank you very, very much for all of you who listen and our audience. And we'll see you soon. Say good afternoon or good morning or whatever it is out there now.
Well, it's afternoon now, so have a good lunch, everyone.
All right, folks, take care. We'll talk to you later. Thanks, Vicki.
You're welcome. Bye.
Good night. Good afternoon. Good night, whatever it is. Bye.